Hello and welcome to the podcast edition of Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf, your source for news, reviews, previews, and interviews with authors and artists about baseball books, music, film, pretty much anything you can fit on a bookshelf. And that's the slogan, if it fits on a bookshelf, it fits here. There are a few books out there, ostensibly written by pro athletes, describing how to play baseball. Joe DiMaggio published one, so did Bob Feller, but those are just basic, without nuance, and probably written for kids just learning, not adults looking for tips on how to enjoy baseball even more. Jason Kendall, a veteran of 15 major league seasons, had the perfect vantage point since he spent almost all the time looking out on the field from behind the plate. His 2,025 games at that position ranks fifth on the all-time list, even though he played at least four fewer seasons than the men ahead of him, a testament to his endurance and desire to play. With the help of Lee Judge, a political cartoonist and baseball blogger for the Kansas City Star, Kendall recently published Throwback, A Big League Catcher Tells How the Game is Really Played. I spoke with him recently about his new book. Jason Kendall, welcome to the Baseball Bookshelf.
Brian, thanks for having me.
Hi, so how did this book come into being?
You know what's funny is it wasn't like when I was done playing, I want to go write a book. It kind of fell in my lap, and Lee Judge, who wrote it with me, was the first reporter that I had seen in the 15 years that I played that really tried to get inside of a Major League Baseball player's head, just like the little things. Most people want to see the home runs, the diving plays, and you know, the pitcher who struck out 10 through 6 innings. He would go a little bit further, and baseball could be very, very boring if you don't know what's going on the whole time. There is a game within a game on every pitch. So what happened was I thought that it would be a really, really cool idea to you know, let people know, like the little things that go on, whether it be from the outfield positioning to a pitcher trying to hold on a runner, you know, with a slide step. And what happened was I got injured, and Lee came over and watched the game and wrote one chapter and sent it in, and we got a check, and we're like, man, we really got to do this now? So that's really kind of happened. That's how it happened. And you know what? Hopefully it can help out to make the game more, whether you're going to the ballpark or whether you're going to watch it with your family at home. Hopefully what we did, it's going to make it a little bit more enjoyable to watch the game because it is the greatest game that there is.
Have you ever read any books like this before? I mean, I know there are a few books that analyze the game out there, but have you ever read any of these? And if so, what your thoughts on were those?
You know, I really haven't. And, you know, most books, you know, I was born in San Diego, and you know, they talk about someone's life. But this was just something that I think like I said, it just really fell into our lap, and I thought it would be cool to, you know, let a family enjoy the game a little bit more as opposed to just, you know, watching the home runs, now obviously those are the things that you want to see when you go to the ballpark or on TV and, you know, you want to see your hometown team win. But if you can watch every pitch, there is a game within a game on every pitch. And I think just kind of wanted to let people know what is going on inside of our heads throughout the first pitch to the last pitch.
Now, you mentioned watching the game on TV. This book takes a position-by-position approach to what's going on in every fielder's head, what's going on in the pitcher's head, what's going on in the batter's head. But I found that in order to really appreciate the book, you have to be at the game because television doesn't give you the angles where you can watch. Like you can see what a shortstop is doing before the pitch, what an outfielder is doing before the pitch. So it's almost like you have to go to the game to really appreciate this book.
Oh, without a doubt. If you go to the game after you read it and then go back, but you're right, on television, you can't see where the positioning of the outfielders are. But it will make it a little bit more enjoyable to you because you will know where they're at or where they're supposed to be at depending on who's hitting and what pitch is being called. The one thing about television, and trust me, I'm doing it now, it looks very, very easy. But the one thing you can't tell is you can't tell that late sink that ball has that's coming in at 92 miles an hour, that late cut. It looks very easy, and anybody could be an armchair quarterback. But it's this ball's coming in hot, and it's just moving all over the place. But on television, it makes it look very, very easy.
Now, in television, they have a finite amount of cameras set up. I noticed, especially with the video replay challenges that they have now, they're constantly showing replays. Like in between pitches, they're showing a close-up replay of where a pitch goes. And one of the things I notice is as much as the umpires might get the call wrong initially, they're doing it in real time. They don't have the benefit of slow motion replay. They have to call it right then and there. So this gives you, as much as you might not like it being a player and being in a confrontational situation with umpires from time to time, it gives you a little respect for what they have to go through.
Without a doubt. You know, I think first and foremost what I want to say about the umpires is if they go to a 3 or 4 game series in a city, they're on the next flight out when that series is over with, and they go to these guys really, really live out of a suitcase. And I believe they get maybe two-week vacations a summer, but these guys are away from their family a lot. So what they do in the split-second timing that they have to with all of these televisions screens and you know the Fox tracks and all of these things, what happened was I think about 10 years ago they had this thing called Quest-Tech. And it really tried to shrink the umpire strike zones down. Usually all the umpires came in and had their own zones. And as a catcher, you would know what guy had a big zone or a small zone. But because of all the computers, the high def and all that, so these guys are really under a microscope. And obviously if you're at a hometown game and the call doesn't go your way, these guys are going to get booed off the field. But these guys have a tough gig and definitely very respect them.
As a catcher, did you ever in all the homework that you do in preparation for each game, do you ever think about who's umpiring behind the plate and taking that into consideration when you set up your strategy?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. And you know what? It's also on who's pitching on the mound. Because if a guy is going to be consistent, and I'll just use down and away, if a guy's going to be consistently hitting the spots or maybe a little bit, you're going to get more calls. If a guy's very erratic and then he hits that one spot and the umpire calls it a ball, well, he's calling a ball because the pitcher's not consistent. So you definitely do. There's guys that still have small strike zones, and there's guys that still have bigger strike zones. But it all depends on whether the pitcher has control and he's consistently hitting those spots.
There was an article I read a couple weeks ago, maybe a month ago, about how scientific studies, and I use that term very loosely, have shown that umpires give a little more of a benefit of a doubt to all-star players, whether they're pitching or at the plate. If an all-star pitcher, if a Hall of Fame pitcher like Greg Maddux is on, his game might be a tiny bit off, he'll get calls more often in his favor than a rookie coming up. And the same thing for batters. Well, what's your opinion on that?
Yeah, I think it's human nature, and I think you have to earn that respect. It's one thing to get to the big leagues. It's another thing to stay for a while. But when I say I think it's human nature, yeah, these umpires see these guys. And Bob Smith, and I'm just making a name up, is facing Albert Pujols. And Albert Pujols has his 15 years in the big leagues. And there's a borderline pitch where it might go both ways. Of course Albert Pujols is going to get it, for the most part. I'm not saying all the time. But it's a respect thing that you have to earn. And when you are in the big leagues and you have, you know, over 2,000 hits, you're going to get a little bit more calls than the guy that, you know, might have 150 hits. Is it fair? I don't know. I think it's just human nature. But it also depends on who's behind the plate. And one of the things that we do talk about in the book is the communication with the umpire from the first pitch to the last pitch. I can't speak for everybody, but for myself, I was having a nonstop conversation with the umpire throughout the game. And it's a respect thing. You will never see a catcher turn around and look at the umpire. Usually the catcher will be ejected if they are arguing. But you can see the mask and you know, not I don't say jawing, but, you know, talking the whole game, whether it be he's going to be there all day on that outside corner or, hey, how's the family? You know, just little things. I mean, it could be from stuff like that to how wild your pitcher is to how consistent he is. And, you know, these guys bust their butt. But it's definitely, I think your veteran players are going to get those borderline calls.
You spent almost your whole career catching. Did you have to do any kind of special research to get insight into the other positions on the field?
No, you know, I was very fortunate growing up, and I had a father who played in the big leagues for 12 years. I grew up in the game, and I will say this, the catcher is the one spot on the field that can see everything. And that's why you see everything. You can see the jumps the outfielders get on certain balls, and the good ones move before the ball's even hit. But it's one of those things where I just knew it. And I knew it because, and I grew up in the game. I grew up with a baseball in my hand. It's all I've ever wanted to do. And I was very, very fortunate to live my dream and go out and get a big league uniform dirty every night. It's a pretty cool job.
Now, you mentioned your dad, Fred, was a major league catcher. Did that have any special influence on you growing up?
Oh, without a doubt. And I think eventually my mom was always telling my dad, no, he's not going to catch. But when I got to the point to where you're in the action, you're in every pitch. There's no standing around in between pitches. And, you know, looking at, I played outfield, I think, for 27 games, and I think I made one good play, and it was downhill from there. Because, you know, not to say that you're locked, but you start thinking about your at-bat before or your bat that's coming up. And catching, in baseball, generally, you have to be able to split offense and defense up. But catcher more so, because your main job is to get the pitcher through as many innings, the starting pitcher through as many innings as possible, and then hand it over to the bullpen. That is your main job. And everything else, obviously you have to hit, and obviously you have to be able to control the running game. But your number one priority is to get the pitcher. And it just was so intriguing to me. And it was so, and I was so prepared that, I mean, well, there's two easy things to do in baseball. One is hustle. One is be prepared. I was so prepared. The situations didn't always pop up in a game, but if they did, it was like clockwork. It was just, here we go. So I learned so much from my father, and I learned so much from that era watching my father that, you know, those guys played when it was a game. Not that these guys aren't playing hard today, but those guys were playing for a contract for the following year. These guys, I watched my old man come home and, you know, work two construction jobs. So I learned so much from that era and from my father. And catching, it was just became so intriguing to me, and it was just something that I just loved to do.
Now, that leads into my next question in a way. The name of the book is pretty definitive. It's a throwback. And there's always been comparisons between modern players and their predecessors. Have you ever thought how you might have done had you played in your father's era or even earlier eras? It seems like you would have fit in better than a lot of players today.
Well, you know what? I think the game, one thing about baseball is the game's going to continue to stay the same. And when I say that, I mean, the names are going to change. I mean, there is, you know, the instant replay, the plays of the play. You can go on and on with little things that have changed, but the game's going to continue to go on. That era was just a little bit different because they weren't making the money. And I'll be the first one to say that the money in baseball is, it's a little crazy, but I'm not dumb. I'm not going to say no, but the players are getting the money today because the guys in that era, they went through two or three strikes. And so it's, hopefully the players today appreciate that, and I believe they do. But it is a different game. And the one thing about baseball, though, there's always somebody right behind you coming to take your spot.
Now, being the kind of player you are and very opinionated, there are players, and Brian McCann comes immediately to mind, that they kind of take on the role of maintaining a certain respect for the game when it comes to younger players. McCann had a face down with Carlos Gomez for taking his time on a home run a year or so ago. Do you see this as a youth thing or a cultural thing where players coming from various countries might not have the same respect for what older players and fans might call doing things the right way?
I wouldn't say that. I would say that the respect thing, I think whatever country you're from, this game is hard. And I think the respect factor on a baseball field, everybody has respect for them because they know how hard it is, especially, you know, as an individual, whatever position you may be playing. That being said, is Ryan McCann, he was protecting his teammates. There's one thing, you don't embarrass the game. You don't embarrass yourself. And you don't embarrass the city that you're playing for. What Brian McCann did, you know, last year with the Braves was 100% correct. And there was stuff that happened. I believe Mahomes was pitching before. Correct me if I'm wrong. And then Gomez was good for Brian McCann for doing that because he disrespected not only Mahomes but the Atlanta Braves. And Brian's like, no, that's not going to happen. So there's certain unwritten rules that have been around forever since the game was started that will continue to be around, and what Brian McCann did just in that situation was perfect. That's what you're supposed to do as a leader of your team, and you know, you're not going to disrespect our team. That's the attitude you have to have.
Well, let's switch gears just a little bit and talk about the actual book, the process of doing it. So you said you sat down with Lee Judge when you were injured at some point, came up with the first chapter. How did things move from there?
You know what? I had two shoulder surgeries, so I was pretty much out for a couple years. And he would come over and watch games, and we would just start talking baseball, and we'd go position by position and watch the games. And it really did just fall on our laps. And I'll be honest with you, when I got our first check, I was going, man, we really got to sit here and hang out for the next 2 years and do this. But we had such a good time, and it was just so neat to me that he was trying to explain to everybody that, you know, what actually goes on. It's not just a three-hour game where you're eating hot dogs and nachos, and no, don't get me wrong, that's a very cool part about it, but and you're waiting for that home runner, waiting for that diving play. It's such an intriguing, an amazing game, and I think we just wanted everybody to see what we saw, and, you know, every pitch is something special happens on every pitch.
Now, just for those who aren't familiar with Lee, he's a writer for the Kansas City Star and a big baseball guy, obviously. What about the after the book came out? Are you doing a lot of interviews like this? Are you making author appearances? Well, and what's that like for you? As an athlete, you're used to being interviewed, but is this much different?
You know what? I do some phone interviews like I'm doing right now. But I still work with the Kansas City Royals. And when the Royals are here, I go to the ballpark, I don't do anything. We did a couple book signings. It was all very new to me, obviously. Mm-hmm. But it was really neat to people that, hey, you know what, this guy, because I'm known for the guy that snapped his ankle and got in some fights, and some people liked me, some people didn't. But it was neat for me to be able to talk and do the Q&As. I think that was more neat for me as opposed to just the book signings. I mean, you sign your name, but just to get some questions from fans, whether they be baseball fans, whether they be my fans, whether they're not my fans, has been really neat for me, because people get to, hey, this guy's not just the guy that got in a bunch of fights, and it's neat for me just to interact and answer questions because I've had so many cool questions, and basically about, you know, on a pitch by pitch basis from the game.
Now, am I correct? You're currently a special assignment coach for the Royals?
Yes, sir.
What does that entail?
You know what? I go, and I'm so freshly out of the game, and I've played with half the guys on our team right now. And you know what? I'm just, hey, certain things. I go over the scouting reports with, you know, our catchers. We got one of the best in the game. Whether it be a catcher, a position, another position player, a pitcher, just kind of help them out. Because I did play for a long time, and I did see a lot. And these guys will come and just try to pick your brain. And that's what I did with my dad. That's what I did with veteran players when I was a younger player. And so I think it's being freshly out of the game. It helps a lot because, like I said, the game has changed a little bit. I have pitched to a lot of these guys. A lot of these hitters and the positioning, just little things that, any advantage you can get on a baseball field that might help you win a game, it's little things like that. And then I respect our general manager more than anybody that I've ever been around in this game. So that's another reason I'm there, because I want to see this guy win. And, you know, we got a good team right now and in a little pennant race right now, and we'll see what happens.
So what's ahead for you? Do you see yourself managing at some point, maybe?
I think I do at some point. But right now I'm enjoying being a dad, taking care of my kiddos, and doing all those cool things that I didn't get a chance to do when I was playing.
Unfortunately, technical difficulties deleted the rest of my conversation with Jason Kendall. Now, we finish it up with a question on whether he missed the game and comparing it to Derek Jeter's season-long love fest, having announced his retirement early in the season. So I want to thank Jason Kendall for his thoughtful comments, and it's a fantastic book. It's one of the best on this kind that I've read from a player's perspective. And join us again next time when our guest will be Lee Judge, the co-author of Throwback. So thanks. I hope you're having a good summer. Remember to visit the Baseball Bookshelf frequently. And don't forget about our Book of the Week contest. Leave a comment and maybe you can win a free book. So thanks again, everybody. See you next time.
Said, boys, I'm glad I discovered this land. Gee, it's a wonder.